Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Salera Report. We are here to talk about building wealth and to introduce you to one of the new wealth builders on the Salera team, Ricardo Awesome. Welcome to welcome to the Salera Report.
Thank you very much.
So Ricardo has been a very important member of my second company, Salera Investment Screens, and he works with me there. And the third quarter, when we were going to publish Building Wealth, I decided to ask him to help me with Building Wealth. And so we've kind of shanghaied you into the Salera Report.
Correct. Yes.
But we're very pleased that we have. Now, I'm going to say a little bit about your background. So you went to business school. You had a very successful early career at an investment firm here. And then a wonderful ally, Jason Bond Smith, introduced us. So why don't you tell the story?
Sure, absolutely. So while I was working for this financial firm, I started up a e-commerce business with two friends of mine, and we were looking for a very trustworthy and reliable business partner that could supply. And so we, via a different route, we heard about Jason Bolton Smith and his success in Australia and that he was trying to come to Europe.
Uh-huh.
So this is why when I reached out back in the day when I was still using Facebook, I sent him a Facebook message and I reached out and I asked him, I said, look, I've heard about your willingness to start in Europe and why don't we have a conversation and see if we could help each other out because we're looking for a reliable supplier. And Jason was always a big people investor, but he wanted to do his what he called his sniffing test first.
Uh-huh.
So he wanted to, for him, integrity was everything.
Yes.
So before he wanted to do business with us, he said, I don't know you, so first I have to meet you. So why don't you, because by coincidence, I'm traveling around Europe from Poland to Germany, several other places. Why don't you come to Munich, to Germany?
So did you guys get together in Munich before he came to Bulgaria or had, because he was with me in Bulgaria and Romania.
I think it was going there after.
After, okay.
Yeah, I think it was going there after because he was on a mission for the Ethereum depleted water, if I recall correctly.
Right.
And so anyway, he flew me in to Germany because at that time I was still studying. I just bought my first home.
Right.
So going to this event in Munich, spending 3 or 4 days there at a hotel was a big investment.
Uh-huh.
And Jason, being a people investor that he was, he decided to take a risk and he flew me out. And this is when we spent 4 or 5 days very closely together, talking day in, day out from breakfast until dinner.
That was Jason.
That was Jason, yes.
Yeah.
And he invested a lot of time getting to know me in all different kinds of scenarios. And we talked everything from business to reality, and he introduced me to the Salera Report.
Uh-huh.
And then he did his sniffing test, if you will, to get to know us. Or get to know me.
Right, but then he insisted that you meet me and I meet you.
Absolutely.
Right? And what did he say?
So at that time, he said, because Jason was struggling with his illnesses at the time, so he decided not to pursue the retail business.
Right.
And he decided to quit that. But we still kept his relationship of mentor and mentee, and he was giving me all his knowledge, and he was freely giving away his time to train me, which was very generous of him.
Uh-huh.
And at that time he said, look, I cannot be the supplier you guys are looking for, but what I can do for you is I can introduce you to Catherine Austin Fitz because you're working in the financial industry. And if you want to know how the financial sector really works and how reality is really built up, you have to meet her. And as chance would have it, she's in the northern part of the Netherlands. You are in Rotterdam. So I will just make that introduction. And so he did.
Uh-huh.
I traveled up to Stavoren and that's when we met.
Yeah. So one of the things that brought you to Stavoren is your love of learning.
Absolutely.
And that's going to bring us back to building wealth, because at the core of building wealth is the love of learning, right?
Absolutely.
So that brought us together. But fast forward, I guess it was about a year and a half later, you joined Salera Investment Screens, or not joined, but started helping us with Salera Investment Screens. Anyway.
Absolutely. So. Yes.
Okay. So you want to just give two sentences on what you do for Salera Investment Screens?
Sure. So at Salera Investment Screens, what we do is we screen companies, and it's mostly about the governance side. We're looking for reliable management, proven track record, that are able to manage the different chaotic environments that the businesses they operate navigate through. And what I do is I help you out. We're a small team, so I help you out with wearing many different hats, everything from helping you out with the analyses, to thinking about next steps in terms of marketing it, And
so one of the things I love about doing the screen is you're looking at many, many different companies. And ultimately, what you're looking at is a group of people who start and build a company. And when you find one, I'm thinking of the, you know, one company in Japan that we both
absolutely
love. A company is a living system. And what you find is this living system, a group of people, you know, who over multiple generations have built something that is just remarkable. And it builds wealth.
Yes.
And it builds wealth for them, but it builds wealth for their customers. It builds wealth for their investors. And when you find it, it's exciting. It's
absolutely
beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely.
Right.
And one thing with this particular example that really comes to life is the fact that this is a multi-billion market cap company.
Right.
They're huge.
Right.
But you pull any Dutchman from the street, and they're notorious for their bicycle habits. You pull them off the street and you look at their bicycle parts, and it's arguably this company. They
right
dominate the market on a worldwide scale, and they do it with an exceptional track record that is clean.
Right.
If you look at what, so one thing we do is we look at the risk incidents that
yeah
these companies have around the world and their track record, and these guys have just sailed
it's
the course that exceptionally clean.
It's unbelievable. Anyway,
yes,
but it, to me, it's always exciting when you find a group of wealth builders, and it's it can be a little thing like bicycle components
yes
for generations. Anyway, okay. Well, what happened was, so let's talk a little bit about the Building Wealth curriculum now that we're going to dive in. What happened to me was for most of my life, I was just building wealth. I didn't think about it. I mean, it was like osmosis. And part of building wealth was, it was a point of view, but the other, you know, it was also a culture. It was a certain habit, you know, and I worked on Wall Street and I grew up with wealth builders. I worked on Wall Street with wealth builders. It's just how we were. I never thought about it. And then when I got booted out of the establishment, I started to be talk publicly and ask questions. What I discovered was building wealth was not something other people knew about. They hadn't been trained to it. They hadn't. And so I started to try and teach it. And then I became an investment advisor because most of the questions that I got was around people managing their money. And I spent 10 years helping hundreds of people and families with their management of resources and their effort to build wealth. And I learned an enormous amount about what works, what doesn't work, where people get tricked. And of course, part of it was that everyone was facing more and more change in the environment, more and more corruption, you know, tremendous amounts of financial fraud and health fraud. And you would see a wonderful family who'd been building wealth for generations, and one financial fraud or one yeah health fraud could seriously damage their whole position. And so it was through all these, you know, story after story, experience after experience, that I started to say, okay, how do I build this into a series of tools that can help people be successful in this environment and radically improve their chances of building wealth. And so the question was, okay, sounds great. How do you do that? And for many years over the Solera Report, I would just keep publishing. Okay, they need this. I'll publish that. I'll, you know. But finally, the time came where it was necessary to put it into a framework. And that is what you have done an incredible job of helping me do. And so we did it for the second quarter equity overview in 2022, got a lot of feedback, repackaged it, went to Knoxville, presented it. That was fun.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what does a wealth builder do? They go get the laptop when the PowerPoint will work. That was pretty amazing. Anyway, but we've delayed publishing it until we could really package it into a website and a series of materials. Now,
yes,
before we dive in, I just have to say, building wealth is a way of taking the vast majority of the Solera content and organizing it into a framework, which is really action-oriented. So
absolutely,
that's another way. And if you're new to the Solera Report, you can just come in, and building
yes
wealth should be a way to dive into the material in a way that is most useful for you. So it's not just sort of a curriculum on how to build wealth. It's a framework for accessing the Salieri Report curriculum in a way that's most useful to you.
Yes. Okay? And if I may interject there, one thing I would add is that about 2/3 of the curriculum is indeed Salieri material. And then 1/3 is outside material, right? Where we have a feeling that this may augment the thing we're trying to teach at that certain chapter.
Right.
And coming back to the story about Jason, one thing he really taught me is that you, starting with integrity, you don't have the time to do an integrity check yourself all the time. So you want to rely on this trusted network of individuals.
Right.
And it's like these circles where if I trust you and you vet somebody else, then if I rely on your judgment, I can rely on this other person of being a high integrity individual, most of the cases.
Right. You want to trust but verify. So they have to go through their own process. But what you don't want to do is if people you trust, you know, if you're just vetting people who are trusted by the people you trust, you have a much better chance of getting to where you want to go.
Sure.
Okay. So let's talk about the curriculum as a buffet.
Absolutely. So let's dive in.
Okay.
So first and foremost, this is the outline for today's talk. And we've spoken a little bit about my background, but you've spoken about the background of the curriculum too. Next step, I would say, let's dissect what the curriculum actually looks like. And then afterwards, the six pillars that we chose, which are absolutely vital to master each and every one of them.
Right.
So you always like to use the analogy of the black belt.
Well, what you should know is, Ricardo, how would I describe you? A martial arts champion?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well.
And you started when in martial arts?
When I was 12. Yes.
When you were 12?
Yeah, when I was 12, I started doing karate. I was going through some adversity in high school. And that's when my dad pulled me into the dojo and he said, look, you have to work on this. You have to build that inner resilience so you can overcome those situations. So he pulled me in and we started working on that. And throughout those last 15 years, I've just been incrementally building that toolbox.
Right.
And you learn, you spoke about this learning metabolism, this will to always keep learning. And that's one of the first and foremost things is when you achieve your black belt, you're only starting out. That's the starting point. Everything before that is just warming up.
Right, but you have to go through these different belts. So whenever I think of the pillars, I always think of the, you know, earning your way through the belts of martial arts.
Absolutely. So we'll get to the six pillars of building wealth. But first and foremost, so we spoke about the evolution and how this came about.
Right.
The buffet structure, what we mean by that is that this is everybody can start in whichever pillar, in whichever chapter that they deem is most necessary and most their highest priority at that certain time. Because we've got people coming in from different backgrounds. We've got artists who come from a very creative background and want to learn more about the very tangible side of financial equity, how to manage their investment portfolio, what to pay attention to, those kind of very tangible things. And then there's people like myself who come out of a very tangible boots on the ground financial sector.
Right.
And I recall very, very well when we first met, I was expecting this lecture about the financial world, but you went through all these different kinds of points and you connected them. And next thing I know, I'm listening to Vivaldi and learning all about why I should listen to classical music and why I should listen to Bach and Vivaldi and how that will optimize your life in so many aspects. So that's what we call living equity. Right. It's everything from culture to things you cannot really put a price tag on in the market. And that is, I would say, the integration of those different aspects. So everybody can start out wherever they feel is most necessary for them.
Right. And it's just like a buffet. I used to belong to a couple of clubs that would have these spectacular buffets. And you would walk up to them and you would want everything, you know, but you can't eat everything. Or certainly not to, you know, we can come back next Sunday and have the lobster. But, you know, you've got to decide this week we're going to have crab or, you know, whatever. So it's really important that you, when you see the full offering, that you not feel overwhelmed and just say, look, this is a buffet. Where is the most energizing place for you to start? You know, and it's a journey. It's never over. So you just want to graze on the buffet in the way that is the best for you.
And if you want to use that metaphor, you can only fill up your plate at a certain time with so much food.
Right.
And if the plate is a metaphor for time, then you have to break it up into palatable pieces.
Right.
And you can only take this amount of food at a time.
Right. So I just want to stress one thing. I know you said this. This is what I learned as an investment advisor. Everyone is different. Everyone is unique. Mm-hmm. In a decentralized world. Now, in a centralized world, we're all put into little blobs, right?
Yes.
But we reject that. In a decentralized world, everyone is unique. And as we go through the pillars, we'll see that. But only you can understand and optimize the best pathway for you. And you can take lots of advice from other people, but ultimately, the best pathway is the one that you're going to work out for yourself because you are unique.
Absolutely. And that is a perfect segue into the next item, which is you really have to own whatever tool you're going to integrate into your toolbox. It can't be a mask you put on in a certain situation, pun intended.
Right.
So this is not something that you can just put on and act to be a wealth builder. This is something you really have to be. It's a philosophy that you integrate into your being. So you do this on a daily basis. You weave it into your intentions, into your thoughts. You have to really believe it and be it, not just do it every now and then.
I didn't understand this till I ended up trying to explain it. And I was shocked to realize, I was raised and trained to always think of myself as a wealth builder. You know, wealth building was just a power I had. Wealth building was something I could do. It was it was an identity. It translated into habits and behavior and learning interests and everything else. But it never occurred to me that I couldn't do it. You know, it was a power I had. And it was a wonderful power to have. It was something to celebrate. It's all part of being part of doing conspiracies. And so, that was the great thing about the, our transactional model of, and when I say conspiracy, I don't mean anything illegal, but,
Sure.
Getting together, coming up with a way to build your future, transacting your way into the future. And it was fun. But it was an identity. I'm a wealth builder. I can build wealth. I have that power. And so even before you can do it, you have to know that you can do it. You have to own the identity.
Yes.
And I told you the story when I settled the litigation. And I said, I took most of the money that I one, and I divided it between two pots. One is I bonused all the money out to lots of people. And I had all these relatives or friends who said, you can't do that. You know, you failed. You're poor now. You need that money to survive the rest of your life. And I just looked. I started to laugh. I couldn't believe it. I said, no. I'm going to start it. So I put the rest into starting Solaria. Since Solaria is going to be very successful and I'll just build more wealth.
Yeah.
You know, what's the problem? Yeah. I'm a wealth builder. I'll build more wealth. And they're like, no, you don't know. It's over. Yeah. It's a year of failure. It's just like, no, you don't. Mm-hmm. But it has to be, it comes back to identity.
Absolutely. It's something woven into your DNA at a certain point, and it doesn't matter what the situation is or the place you're at. You're always looking to literally build something.
Right.
And that usually springs from cooperation, successful cooperation between yourself and those environments, and mostly people.
Right. And so if you're sitting here listening to this and you don't feel like a wealth builder, you have the power to decide you want to be one and just do it. It's the quote we have at the top of the landing page on the Building Wealth website is from Curtis Mayfield. It's from his song, People Get Ready. He said, you don't need a ticket. You just get on
board. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So if you want to be a wealth builder, you just decide you're going to be one.
Absolutely.
And you don't let it go.
Yeah.
Right.
And maybe just a final note on this topic. So when you interact with those people, the binding constraint for that successful cooperation is you always want to be clear and you always want to be in agreement.
Right.
Right before proceeding, before moving forward, you always want to make sure that those two boxes are checked.
Right. So where is that? Is that navigation tools? I forget where it is. Yeah, it's in navigation tools.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah. All right. And then we have spoken about the intergenerational transfer. So this is really where, for my personal situation, if I may speak from my standpoint, I've learned so much from interacting with yourself, with Jason, and several other, for
example. And the whole Solaria team.
The whole Solaria team, and all these people that have done what you're trying to accomplish, maybe not in exactly the right way, but they will have encountered the same threats, the same situations, the same blocks of...
Well, every person on the slur team, they're each unique. They're totally different. It's hard to put them in a box, but they're all in their own way wealth builders.
Absolutely.
That's how they, that's what they are. That's how they live.
Absolutely.
Right.
And this is really where the big thing about building wealth for me is that you're able to take shortcuts because the mentor has already done what you're trying to accomplish in a certain aspect, and you can pick their brains and learn from them so that
so
you don't have to fall
for
the trap.
I wouldn't call it a shortcut. I would say that Mr. Global runs you around in circles. And we show you how to jump the curve over the runaround. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Right.
So you can be wildly productive. Yeah.
Right.
And you don't have to make unnecessary mistakes or fall for unnecessary traps.
Right.
That is what this is all about. And
So let me just talk about the two teams for a second before we go to the six pillars, because this was the big shock for me. I didn't know this. This is what we discovered doing this. And that is, you know, I'm really interested in teaching you everything I can so that you can jump the curve on this or that or this or that. But as I talk to people about using these materials, the people who have a lot of experience at building wealth are very excited about teaching the younger people. And the younger people are very interested in learning. And so there's this phenomena that's been unleashed in the Solari team between the people. It's like, oh, God, I can teach a group of young people how not to get tricked the way I got tricked.
Yes.
I sat down with somebody who had an experience with Madoff that was unforgettable. And the thought that she could help people coming up to avoid that trap and the different traps she'd had to overcome was so exciting for her. It was unbelievable. So you know, in one sense, we're all wealth builders, but we're thinking in terms of this intergenerational transfer that I think is so important.
Absolutely. Okay. And while we are prototyping this within the Solari team and Direct Network, we encourage everybody to start their own circle of wealth builders and mentors.
Right.
And being a wealth builder, like we said, is an identity that's, it's not necessarily tied to your age.
Right.
You can be 50 years old and you want to be a wealth builder.
Right.
And wealth means something else for everybody, but we'll get to that once we dive
into
the
other thing is, anybody who had a lot of experience at building wealth, it's very important, I think, to realize there is an incredible opportunity to transfer that knowledge now. Because if we're going to build the kind of civilization you and I want to live in, as opposed to what Mr. Global is building right now, that is one of the things that's going to power us to do it. So
absolutely.
And of course, you know, I have to put in a plug for a for-profit revolution.
Absolutely.
Because people say, well, money is not important. Who has to build wealth? You know, that's the wrong culture. That's not my values. My attitude is, if you don't want to be dependent on your enemy, you've got to be financially self-sustaining. Yeah. And you've got to do it with others.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, one of my quotes is from a Texan who's not necessarily the most popular guy in the world. He says, if this country's worth saving, it's worth saving at a profit. Well, it's profitable transactions that build the future.
That's true.
Right.
Absolutely. As long as you provide that value, it's more than fair to get a price for it and then keep the mission, keep it self-sustainable.
Right.
That's a very healthy way of seeing
it.
Now, these are the six pillars of building wealth. And going back to your example of the belts, you have to master each and every one of them in order for you to be a successful wealth builder, to become at a level of, to attain a level of mastery.
Right.
You have to master each and every one of them.
Right.
And that doesn't necessarily have to be in one specific order, so you don't have to start from left to right.
Right.
Although I would say it helps to have a clear vision of what that free and inspired life looks like for your situation.
Right.
If you don't know where you're going,
right,
then
So here's what I learned being an investment advisor is that you get these families or people who get most of the things right. They get one wrong, or they say, you know, I'm a financial equity. I'm just going to go make money. I don't care about living equity. Mm-hmm. And that's how they get tricked. And you can be great at, you know, at, you can be great at financial equity, but if you mess up living equity, most people mess up risk management. you know, you lose the whole thing. And that's why the idea is, okay, we're going to build mastery in all of them. So to get to the black belt, you've got to be sufficient at all the belts. Mm-hmm. And it's that integration that makes you powerful and makes you really be able to jump the curve over the circles that Mr. Global wants you to run in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would just add one thing about the education aspect. What my generation, if I can speak on our behalf, what we identify in the current curricula that we find in universities or schools or trade schools or whatever, universities were initially set up to provide universal knowledge.
Right.
That's where it comes from.
Right.
But these days, it's very much about this very specific and narrowed down segment of knowledge that you're learning about,
right,
which is tying you into this little box.
Right.
And one thing that we're trying to bring out with this is that you can't operate in this tiny box. You have to be integrating those different aspects of your life.
But you do have to pick up the tools. I mean, I'm a great believer in trade schools. You know, if I had to do it all over again, I'd go to a bunch of trade schools. But, you know, picking up trades and skills is terrific. For navigating, you need the big map.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not either or. You got to do both. And what you don't want to do is you don't want to be educated to be slotted in as, you know, working in a tight lane ladder for Mr. Global.
Exactly.
Right.
Are you reduced to being a spoke in a huge wheel?
Right.
Or are you trying to become the very wheel itself and master all those different aspects?
But I want to be both, because there are times when I want to go undercover, just go into so it was very interesting. Once I ran, after I ran the Federal Housing Administration, it really taught me how to be a great employee, you know, to run the whole thing. And I learned a lot about what it would be good, you know, how to be a good person to just slip into a team and work bottom up to be a great member of a team instead of, you know, running the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's very useful to, you know, I want to know how to be good middle management, but I don't want to be trapped by it. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. So maybe this is more of a general question. Now we're talking about education, but if somebody were to start out, would you advise to become a specialist first or a generalist first?
I reject the whole paradigm.
I see.
I would say you need a good map. That's a generalist. Mm. You need a toolbox, and you need to put tools in your toolbox.
Mm.
And the more tools you have in your toolbox, the more resilient you are. And in fact, to do most professions these days, there's a whole bunch of different tools you need to get. The more tools you have in your toolbox, the freer you're going to be. Mm. But, you know, my one of my great heroes is Leonardo da Vinci. You know, you could never imagine da Vinci just saying, oh, I'm going to be a specialist in this. You know, he did everything. So my vision, anybody can be a Renaissance man if they want to.
Yeah.
But I think you want to, if you can develop a real skill or trade, or one or two or three, you know, that's fantastic.
Yes.
But of course, it comes back to you. What do you, because this is not my free and inspired life. Mm-hmm. That's why I get upset when everybody says, what should I do here? It's like, wait, you know, I'm having my free and inspired life. You have to choose your free and inspired. I can't choose it for you.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. So that's a perfect segue into the first pillar. So your free and inspired life, this is different for everybody. Everybody has a different picture of what that looks like. But it's very important that you realize that it's your responsibility to define that picture.
Yeah.
And then to go out into the world and start to assemble everything you need to be able to, to manifest that into the world.
Right.
And the great thing is the mentors are there. They can teach you. The knowledge is there. You can access it. You just have to take that responsibility and go out.
You have to give them direction, though. So here's the challenge, and you see it when you're a financial planner. If you're going to the notion, your brokerage account is not your assets.
Mm-hmm.
Your asset is you, your family, your kids, your, you know, the friends that you value, your dojo, you know. So your assets are the people. You and the people you love, you're the asset, not your money, okay? Not your brokerage account, not your real estate.
Absolutely.
Those are resources you use to support your assets, okay? And the idea of building financial wealth is to create the resources you need to support you and the people you love, having your free and inspired life. So we're going to optimize around your purpose. We're going to optimize around your goal. We're going to optimize around protecting and making the real assets safe. Yes, and I don't know how to do that unless you can tell me where we're going. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't tell you where we're going. You have to tell me where. If you let a financial planner tell you where you're going, you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to be in trouble. So you have to decide, why did I come here? Where am I going? Mm-hmm. And then all these different things, these assets are here to serve your purpose. Yes. Now, you know, young people will say to me, I don't know what my purpose, you know, I didn't have this problem from the time I landed on this planet. I was sure, you know, I had my purpose. And it got recalibrated a little bit by, you know, running into Mr. Global a few times. But I knew, and if you look at the statistics, I'm told, you'll read it when you read Scott Peck, a certain percentage of people come just, they always know what their purpose is. They're really directed. Okay. Not everybody does. So my attitude is, if you don't know, try stuff.
Yes.
You know, and there's certain tools you need for any lifetime, any profession, and go about getting the ones that are the, you know, that you need for the crosscut. But this is something you're going to have to find.
So that brings it back to the question, what are you optimizing for?
Right.
And if you're just optimizing, especially in those early days of your career, for money, then you might forego getting all these very valuable tools into your toolbox, learning about these certain skills, or getting this knowledge from different areas. If you forego that opportunity just because you're optimizing for wealth in the very financial side of terms.
So here's what a lot of the financial world teaches you. They teach you, we want you to work as hard as possible, generate as much economic value, and we want you to put it to financing the national security state. And you don't want to spend any money on yourselves or your family because you need to put as much as money in the financial security state as possible. And you need, you know, $25 million if you're going to be safe in the National Security Council. And you're going to, at your funeral, it's all still going to be with the national security state. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's designed to liquidate you to serve a greater goal that is not a goal you necessarily share. And you can't do that. You have to optimize around your purpose.
Absolutely. So that, just as the last note on this pillar, that the money that you assemble throughout your life is just a tool. It's nothing more than that.
Right.
You use it to further that purpose, like you said.
Right.
You use it for that purpose only.
Right.
And some things are very hard to rationalize from a purely financial standpoint. If you're asking a financial planner, is it a good idea to invest whatever the amount is for your specific situation into preparing for whatever scenario you think is likely to occur, it might be a very, very poor financial decision,
right?
But it will make you sleep better at night.
Well, but here's the other thing. If you look at from the time I settled the litigation on to where I've put my money, any financial planner would tell you, you know, it makes no sense. But I wanted to build Solari. I you know, I didn't come to this planet to accumulate central banking paper. That's not my goal. So, you know, I had a purpose, and all my money was organized and invested to achieve my purpose. Because that's...
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you've got to decide your purpose. And our goal at Solari is to help you lead your free and inspired life, not our vision of what your free and inspired life should be. Right? So.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So we're moving on to the next section, which is the navigation tools.
Yeah.
So now that you've established a clear vision of what your free and inspired life, something that energizes you, that you're free to choose, you've established a clear vision of what that looks like.
Right.
How are you going to get there?
So you've heard me say this 1,000 times, and I'm going to keep saying it because I want to, redundancy is good on this one. There's an official story and there's reality, and you need to know both. And I always say, use the official reality at the cocktail party and use reality for your risk management and investment. And, you know, I spent a lot of time as an investment advisor healing people from using reality at the cocktail party and official reality for their risk management investment.
Yes.
So Now, it's truly unfortunate that we live in a world where the governance system is secret and we have, multiple personality disorder, but that's the world we live in. And so you have to navigate that. And the hardest part, if you're a busy person, you have a family, you have a job, you have all these things, how do you get a good map of how the world really works sufficient so that you can navigate it successfully yourself?
So that comes back, I think, to integrity in the news sources that you use. So are you merely looking at something that which is entertaining? And there's a time and place for entertainment.
Right.
There's a time and place for movies, right?
Right.
But then there's actionable intelligence that can help you navigate this
right.
world. And you really want to distinguish between the two of them, because you can waste an incredible amount of time looking at either low integrity people that feed you information that's just completely wrong, untrustworthy, etc., or can even be dangerous if you're
right.
using that for your purposes.
Right.
Trying to navigate that map, which is completely off, you might end up somewhere completely different.
Right.
All the way away from your free and inspired life, that vision.
Right. So I've been watching you try and... So you've done a very good job, I think, of navigating among people who truly are in the official reality and understanding how to work with them in a way... You know, I always say try and align so that you can... find a way to interact so
yeah.
you're giving them energy in a way that gives you energy.
Absolutely.
You're not trying to force your vision of reality on them if they don't want it.
Absolutely.
I've watched you trying to figure out how to do this in your own way. So how's it working?
Well, I would say it has worked out well. So when you're working with people who live in the official reality and you're living in reality for certain purposes of your life, certain aspects, that's all completely fine. That's okay, because you tolerate each other, right? You let each other talk about different things, and it's okay if you have a different belief system. That's perfectly
right.
fine.
Right.
Now, where things might get a bit chaotic is if you impose that belief system onto somebody else.
Right.
So where things really started to rub for me, for example, is when 2 years ago, there was talk about healthcare and mandated healthcare systems where you were obliged to wear masks, or we shouldn't probably get political here.
Right, but we had healthcare mandates that were clearly absurd.
Absolutely.
Right.
And that's when somebody tries to impose that onto you where you're clearly
right.
not in the same belief system and you're living in reality. That's when things can get tricky, and that's when you're starting to really fundamentally rub into some kind of chaos.
Well, but here's what I would say is the more you understand about reality, the more you have to understand it's a great power and it has to be used with discretion.
Absolutely.
Right. And you know, what you can't let your understanding of reality and your power to understand reality run into conflict with respect for other humans and their rights too. I think you have to be respectful of other
yes.
people.
And I would just add one thing, which is there is absolutely no need for cheap virtue.
Right.
Is that if you truly believe that something is virtuous, sure, that's fine. But if it's been imposed onto you by some kind of oppressive measure, or you've been sweet-talked into thinking that something is virtuous...
It's just Mr. Global's little circles.
Absolutely.
Right.
And when it's fundamentally unproductive,
yeah,
like the carbon footprint of a Bitcoin, and then on the other side, you're promoting the green financing and green
right.
bonds, etc., the whole
right.
sustainable thing. Like
so I should just
reconcile.
Point out to the listener that because of what we do in the financial world and in investment screens, we run into a lot of...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
A lot of circles.
But this is very interesting when you go back to that example of the firm, the Japanese firm.
Yeah.
If you look at that firm and you look at what they've been doing, they've just stuck to their guns. They've been fundamentally productive for so many years.
Well, here's the thing.
They've not been led astray.
One of the things you understand when you run a company is that time is your most precious asset. And you don't have time to do these little circles. Mm. You know, because you can end up with a company of 10,000 people all just going in circles. And that's the end. So, okay.
All right.
Navigation tools. This is one of my favorites. Risk management.
Risk management.
Right, because... You know, we're in an environment where one healthcare fraud or one financial fraud can destroy a lifetime of wealth.
Yeah.
And it is absolutely frightening this was the one of the hardest things for me as an investment advisor, because people would come to me, you know, I was known for my stance against corruption. And so people would come to me who had been harmed by corruption, and it was either healthcare fraud or financial fraud or both. And it was absolutely terrifying to see highly intelligent, well-educated people defrauded and tricked in these ways. It was just horrible to watch and the damage it could do. And so the question was, how can you, if somebody has a good map, they're going to avoid risks, but how can they manage their map and their time and their resources to not only see the risks that you get from a good map, but to know how to duck them? And this is where I spent a lot of time trying to figure it out and working on the Solari report to help people get those maps, but then do the risk management. So, but I, you know, in the last 20 years, I've spent so much more time on risk management than I ever dreamed. So,
the interesting thing about risk management is a big part of it is you have to build in resiliency. And there's a great paper in here which talks about how to search for resiliency, because you want to build that into the fabric of your ecosystem, whatever that looks like. And the way you do that is you're also looking for things that might seem redundant, but in the meantime, they're making sure that you are resilient throughout different times, different periods.
Right.
Whatever changes in the marketplace, you can still be productive throughout all those cases.
Right. Well, I've watched during the pandemic people who were prepared, who knew not to fall into the trap, and they didn't. And they protected their family, and they didn't fall out of the trap. And if you look at the difference of what's happening to their time and assets now as a result of avoiding the trap compared to families who didn't avoid the trap, it's, you know, the difference is phenomenal. It's just phenomenal.
So what do you think are the number one reasons why people manage their risks incorrectly? What goes wrong? What are the things that screw up?
One of the things is they say, I don't need to take the time to learn reality and the difference from official reality. I don't need to invest the time to get good maps. Mm-hmm. I don't want to look at it. It's uncomfortable. I don't have the time or whatever. And so, you know, they go out into a war zone it's like going into a war zone without a gun. You know, it's just, you know, they're going out on a battlefield, and they haven't taken the time to make the preparations to navigate the battlefield.
Or without a plan, without a strategy.
Right.
You're going in, you're burying your head in the sand and saying, the world is too evil, I don't want to face it.
Right.
And that's not a good strategy whatsoever.
Right. Well, it can be uncomfortable, but
sure.
But that's the door you have to... We're in a world and we're facing great evil. And you have to be prepared to navigate a world with great evil. So... anyway, again, everybody's different. But if you don't understand that you cannot jump the curve, you cannot outwit this by working hard. That's not good enough. It used to work 10 or 20 years ago. It won't work now. Now you've really got to take responsibility, your community and your country and your media will not take responsibility to do right by you. You're going to have to figure it out yourself.
Personal responsibility.
Right. Right. Okay. Getting to more fun parts.
Absolutely. Ultimately, this is what we're trying to build.
Yeah. Yeah.
You start off with your vision. Uh-huh. You build a good map so you know where you're going, you know what you're facing.
Right.
You make sure you have a protective layer around it of risk management.
Right.
But the core of what we're trying to build is your living and your financial equity, because those will funnel your, they will channel your purpose.
Right.
They will help you. They will be the seed corn. They will finance it.
Right.
But they will also keep it alive.
Right. Now, I would say of the two, living equity is much more important than financial equity.
Absolutely.
Financial equity is there to support living equity.
Yes.
And it's funny. Living equity creates financial equity, which then supports and protects living equity. It's like it's like two sides of a coin that just keep supporting each other. But, you know, I come back, you're the asset, the people you love, they're the asset. Now, all the things that are most valuable in life can't be priced and traded or, transacted as a property, although Mr. Global is trying.
Yeah.
But, and that's why we have a picture of a beautiful baby, because, this is the asset. So this is what you're trying to build up. And, it comes back to all the different things that make for a great human being. So ask yourself, what will make you a great human being? What will build your equity, your skills, your knowledge, your education, your happiness, et cetera? And
this is everything from the habits that you integrate into your day-to-day life to the investment into yourself.
Right.
You can't put a price tag on yourself. Of course, you can put a price tag on a certain skill. If I'm an electrician, I can put a price tag on replacing some kind of wiring.
Right.
But my education, all that knowledge and all those skills that you're acquiring throughout the years, that you can't put a price tag on that.
Right.
That's your intellectual capital.
Right.
And even if you're in a group with people that all have complementary skills or complementary assets, I mean, there's a very nonlinear relationship between the amount of people and the amount of knowledge. It just skyrockets.
Right. So the key to building wealth, I think, is to have just complete integration between living and financial equity. And it was one of the reasons everybody has heard me say many times that what I discovered as an investment advisor is that you can trick a man and you can trick a woman, but you can't trick a man and woman working together, because you get a much better integrated result between living equity and financial equity. So I would work with a couple, and one would be great at living equity and the other would be great at financial equity, but they'd be like the French and Germans, not they weren't hearing each other and they weren't in a position to optimize together. If they would work together, then you had a much better chance. Now, one person can do it, but it's a lot for one person. That's why having families, having, friends, having networks, help each other gives you a better, sort of more power at integrating, because there's a lot to optimize together. It's complicated. So, but I think if you can integrate your living equity with your financial equity and see it clearly, and this was always amazing to me to get a family or a couple who would come to me who was totally not integrated between the two, and teach them and get them to think integrated. And really, I hate to say it, was they've been brainwashed by financial planners who wanted them to go around in circles for Mr. Global and put all their money in the national security state. It was like, really?
But that couple has to realize that they have the power to do that and that they are responsible to work it out themselves.
So many people really believe that they couldn't master understanding the financial system and the tools. They really believe that there was some kind of magic thing that they could never understand, and so they had to depend on these experts. And there are lots of experts you're going to want to use. So they're great experts in the financial area. There's nothing wrong with that. But each one of us has to understand whatever an expert helps us with. And if the expert isn't making sense to you, it's not your problem. It's the expert's problem. And that applies to financial experts too.
Yes. So. Can I take the conversation into a slightly different direction there and circle back to what we were talking about with companies, how at the screen we're looking at these companies in a way where we're not just looking at the bottom line or the balance sheet or whatever is happening over there.
Right.
We're looking at the living equity of this company, literally, the field that is happening within this company. You've spoken on the Solar Report extensively about morphogenic fields or fields, energy fields that are a living thing. And you told me to look at a company not just as a very tangible financial statement. You've told me to look at them as a living world.
It's a culture. It's a living system. It's a culture. It's a culture and it's a set of values and it's certainly a knowledge. It's a pool of knowledge, some of which is written down, but not all of which is written down. And I think, if you look at our reality, we have a portion of reality which is visible to the naked eye, and we have a portion which is invisible. Mm-hmm. And part of optimizing between living and financial equity is recognizing both.
Yes.
That there are things, I would describe them as morphogenic fields, or some people say the field. But fields are real, and you have to understand that dynamic and how it relates to building a company or, building a family or any of the things that combine living and financial wealth.
Yeah, and that's the thing about when that living equity is so strong, it feeds into the culture, the people within the company are like guard dogs of that culture. They're self-enforcing. They don't rely on their management to abide by the rules or abide by the ethics of the company.
Right.
Which I'm thinking about the Paul O'Neill. We always talk about the Paul O'Neill problem, right?
I don't want to say that it's necessarily your favorite business story, but it's my favorite business story. But Paul O'Neill, when he went to run Ekoa, this story is told in Charles Duhigg's book, The Power of Habit. But Paul O'Neill had come from government and was recruited to run Ekoa. And he did a study of the company when he first got there, and he announced that his number one priority was worker safety. And some of the people on the board went nuts because they're like, this guy's going to lose his money. We've got some government guy, he doesn't care about making money, he just cares about work. What is this?
Yeah.
And one thing led to another, and he instituted the worker safety. It was a huge success in Alcoa's productivity and profitability. Mm-hmm. You know, so it turned out to be a very smart financial strategy. But it was because he understood why the living system was experiencing way more friction than you could afford if you were going to get to a productive operation. Anyway, but I used to have a partner who'd call it the Gestalt thing. Mm. And Paul O'Neill could really see the Gestalt thing and see that you had to make a big step forward in living equity to get to the financial equity.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, anyway, but it's one of my favorite business stories.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is the employees started to integrate it into their day-to-day lives, where if they would sit in their own cars in their personal situation, they would be checking those seatbelts and they would be like, oh, this doesn't feel safe at all. Maybe I should work this out and do something about it. So they lived it. They were self-enforcing it from the bottom up.
They lived it. It was authentic.
All right.
Authentic works.
Absolutely.
Right.
So we've spoken about living equity. And here's your financial equity. And we start off with money is a tool.
Right.
Right? That's it. It's there to serve your purpose.
Right.
And money by itself should not be the objective, though it's a vital component of making sure that everything is self-sustainable and that you can finance whatever you need for your free and inspired life. If you're looking to travel the world and work from all these different remote islands, if you want to do that, that's fine, but you're going to need money to buy those tickets.
So I was always shocked after I left Wall Street. You know, somebody, remember when I was in Washington, somebody said, well, we can't do that. We have no money. I said, we don't need money. We just need a plan that can make money. Because if we have a plan that can make money, then we can get all the money we need to make money. Mm-hmm. And no, I thought I was shocked because they thought the folks on Wall Street could make money because they had money. And no, because they knew how to put together a plan that would make money, and then the money, you know, they could get money. But they could only get money because they had a plan to make money that made sense.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and money is a tool. And of course, a lot of what people think of as money is a currency, and it is printed out of thin air.
Absolutely.
Right. So part of understanding how to build financial wealth is getting to know the tool and understanding that the tool can be used. If you look at the financial system, increasingly it's used as a control system, and we know Mr. Global wants to use it to lock down complete control. And so there are many, many people who hate money and hate the financial system and think it's all bad. And what they don't understand is just a tool, and it can be used in a very ugly, evil way. But it can also be used, if you look at what financial liquidity has done for freedom, it's incredible. You know, I'm a person from when I can remember. I mean, I was the youngest person in West Philadelphia to ever have a lemonade stand and be hustling nickels.
Exactly, yeah.
So so I always had an orientation of loving transactions, loving money. So money is a tool, and I love it. And if you look at what financial liquidity has done for our world, it's amazing. It's wonderful.
Absolutely.
It permits billions of people. I don't have to have a conversation with a billion people about what the value of the pair is to you. I just know at 30 cents, it's take it or leave it. How wonderful.
Absolutely.
I mean, I love math.
It's transparency.
Right. But to me, you know, if we could have markets that had prices created with integrity, you're talking about something that will let billions of people communicate simultaneously that takes no time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just flawless. It's beautiful. So I could go on and rap eloquent about math. But a financial tools and a financial system can work well, or it can be a weapon of war. And the problem is the financial system is part of the governance system. We don't have a problem with the financial system. We have a problem with the governance system. And so, you know, I've been frustrated for years when people come to me and say, you know, how would we fix the financial system? I said, until you fix the if you fix the governance system, we could use the existing financial system. It would be fine.
Absolutely.
Right. So there's no point in tinkering with the financial system unless you'll deal with the governance system. It's like
But just to get back to what you were just saying about the financial system and math and all of that.
Right.
One thing the financial system is notorious for, I think, is to make everything so complex or talk about it as if it is so complex that it disempowers people.
Right.
Where I feel that you don't have to study trading options, for example, to be able to make a financial profit in whatever financial instrument.
Right.
You don't have to study that for 5 years and then waste a lot of money trying to become good at it. What you're talking about with the lemonade stand is a fundamental transaction between, it's a hot day, somebody's looking for freshly pressed orange juice, and I'm able to provide that, and I ask a price for that.
Right.
And that's a business. There you go. Right. That's a transaction, and it's completely disentangled from all the central control and all of this mechanism.
Right.
It's completely decentralized in a way.
Right, right. So I do agree that the financial system has been hopelessly complexified. But you can make it simple and you can learn. And it has to be a learning journey. You just set up a learning journey and you go off and you learn. But again, I go back. There are all sorts of people available to help educate you about doing this. But you can, what you have to do, and this gets back to being it in terms of identity.
Yes.
You have to look them in the eye and say, thank you very much for that explanation. I did not understand a word you said. Could you say it again? And I don't know a good financial planner who wouldn't be willing to slow down and teach and make it simple. Because all these things can be made simple. Now, it takes time because there are lots of different ideas and lots of different concepts. One of the things I most stress to people is, look, you know, I used to use these little composition books. Mm-hmm. Every time you read a word you don't know, write it down, look it up, and learn it. And really, what most people who don't understand accounting or financial system need to do is they need to learn about 200 words.
Absolutely.
They need to know the definition of 200 words.
Which is why we start with chapter one, financial literacy within financial equity.
Right.
Because even if you have a business that is very much a blue-collar business and a brick-and-mortar store, you're still going to have to understand the financial statements of your own business.
Right.
You're going to have to understand what the bottom line is at the
end
of the month.
Everybody needs to know accounting. I don't care what you want to do in life. Everybody needs to. Even if you're an artist, you need to know. Now, I will tell one last story. I did a workshop, I don't know, it was about 2001, and there was a very wealthy woman in the audience. And in the middle of the workshop, she let out a scream. And we all stopped and looked. She's a very charming person. And she said, oh, my God, I get it. I said, what did you get? She said, I can understand the financial system. And I can understand tools. And I can understand how to govern my own money. Mm-hmm. You know, I won't be my own money manager, but I can learn how to govern it. And if I do, I can stop people like you from hurting my trees. She was an environmentalist, and she loved, you know, trees and everything. And she said, and so I can master this enough to stop all you evil financial people from destroying my planet. I said, that's right. Mm. And so she gave me a big hug. She was so excited. She said, if I learn money, I can, you know, I can basically overcome all you hideous financial people.
Absolutely.
She was willing to say, okay, I'm a living equity person, but I can master financial equity enough so I can optimize, including my own money. It was great. It was a fabulous moment because so many great living equity people, including very wealthy people, have been browbeaten into believing they can't understand and they can't govern their own money. Mm-hmm. And everybody, unless you for some reason are disabled or, you know, in the middle of, I don't know, you know, you've been drafted to go to war.
Yeah.
Everyone can govern their own money. Everyone can understand well enough to govern their own money.
Yes, and should probably.
And
they should do that probably.
Yeah, they should. I thought you said they should shoot. And I thought, well, gun ownership is another. they may.
That can be part of your living equity, of course, hunting and swords.
Well, that may be part of protecting your financial equity.
Risk management.
Risk management.
There you go. Well, we've got self-defense definitely in risk management.
We do.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So that's about financial equity. Can I just ask one more question just out of sheer interest? So what do people who are just starting out on their financial journey in particular, what are some of the key habits that they have to implement from day one to keep moving forward, even if they don't have access to a wild amount of capital?
The first thing they need to do is they need to have a plan, a learning plan. So we're going to talk about that.
Absolutely.
But the first thing they need to do is they need to make a decision that they are going to be a wealth builder and they're going to take personal responsibility. And then they need a learning plan.
Yes.
And one of the goals of the website is to help make that much easier for you to figure out how to do. So.
There you go. Fantastic. So this is financial equity. And now the sixth pillar.
The most controversial of the six pillars, right?
Absolutely. But a very vital component. So would you please explain to us why you think turtling fourth?
Okay.
Why turtle fourth is such a critical component of attaining that black belt in building wealth?
So I wrote an article many, many years ago called Turtle Fourth. And it's about the importance of never quitting. And if you, and this is appropriate, you know, I think everybody knows it's important not to quit. At the same time, to hold the faith of being a wealth builder in very difficult circumstances is a real spiritual and cultural art. And, you know, because evil really, you know, the goal of evil is to get you to give up and lose faith, you know, to lose your faith, to lose your hope, to lose your love. The beauty of never quitting is you're continuously learning. I mean, we could say instead of turtle forth, the importance of continuous learning. But all the things you need to figure out to be a good wealth builder for you will come from trial and error of you trying things, failing, learning, improving, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's through that, I'm trying to remember if it was you. It's a dear ally that we have. He said, the key to mastery is 10,000 hours.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
10,000 hours, that's 10,000 hours of turtling. Of trying things, of being wrong, of fixing it, it doesn't quite work for you, you have to calibrate it. And the important thing to understand is a lot of us are functioning in a world where we don't control. And life is uncertain, things change, we get hit by the unexpected. And if you've ever watched a turtle, they walk into a wall, they don't quit, they just turn, you know, and it's like, it's a little Pac-Man thing of, you know.
They dig in and they just go one step at a time.
They just keep. But they won't stop. They won't stop. They'll just keep going. So they put in that big shell and they just keep going. Mm-hmm. But they're always prepared to, you know, they're kind of navigators. They'll bob and weave.
When you were facing that lengthy process of litigation and after that was settled, you chose to reinvest that money into the people around you and to rebuild your business up again.
Right.
What made you hold true to that turtle fourth, even though during that time you must have had numerous opportunities to, you know, relinquish those underlying principles or character and say, I take the shortcut, I take the cheap way out, but you never did. You held true to your, to what you stood for. Do you see what I mean?
Well, I'm just trying to think of how you do it. I mean, I wanted to be free. So somebody told me once about a game you play. You know, you all go off to a mansion for a weekend and say the mansion has 40 rooms and you have to write down on slips of paper your 40 most valuable possessions. And then each room you have to give one up. Mm. And so there's like a bowl in each room and you give one up and you give one up. So I play this game in real life where, you know, as I went through the process of going through, you know, basically saying, I'm going to leave the establishment. Mm. I'm going to go to the Woolners. I'm going to fight this. You know, they're not going to run me in this circle. We're going to have a real fight about whether or not there's law and whether I have, you know, the law applies to me and my situation, or you can just come and steal my company and steal my assets and steal. So I decided, okay. And it was very odd because I'm, you know, traditionally I always took the shortcut, which is let's just, you know, plaster this over and move on. Cause mm-hmm. who has time to have an 11-year, I mean, who wants to spend 11 years and 36,000 hours fighting, mm-hmm. right? That's not me. So, I just have to, you know, I kept having to give up, you know, I had to give up my mansion in Washington. I had to give up homes. I had to give up real estate. I had to give up friends. I had mm-hmm. to give up possessions. I had to give up bank accounts. I had to give up, you know, and it just kept, and you come down to two things, which is freedom or your life. And you have to decide.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, because I was in situations where I was sure I was going to lose my life if I kept standing. And I said, you know, it's more important to me to be free than to be alive.
Yes.
And what happened is when you do that, there's a philosophy in Christendom called standing. When you do that and it's hopeless and there's nothing, you know, I used to always have the lawyers get around me and they'd say, it's hopeless, you have to do this. And then I'd laugh and I'd say, well, I'm not going to do it. Mm. So tough. And so when you stand, what happens is then options appear. Mm. It's like the universe says, oh, okay, well, I guess that didn't work.
Yeah.
And then an option appears that you didn't have before you did the stand. You have to stand on the principle. But it was, you know, freedom or my life. And I chose freedom. Yeah. And luckily, I got to stay alive, which is not necessarily what I always expected. But it's a process that makes you get clear about what's important to you. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, part of turtling forth is figuring out and holding to your principles. So maybe we should talk about Marcus right
sure,
now.
Sure, absolutely. So I just want to point out, is it fair to say that what you just described is you're believing into something that is bigger than yourself, something which is eternal, something that you believe in, which you will never let go of, whether it's religion, whether it's faith, whether it's the underlying principles that you abide by. It's something that is bigger than you, that you believe in, and you never let go of that vision.
Well, let me describe it this way. So I decided at a very young age that there had been a terrible mistake, and I had been mistakenly dropped off on a horribly primitive planet. and I didn't know what to do about it. It's like, okay, you know, I come from an advanced civilization. I'm on a primitive planet. It's a mess. Do I really want to be here? Do I really want to stay here? It's the same thing I asked in 1998 when I said, do I really want to live through a genocide? Mm. I mean, it's just, do I really want to live through this? Can I live through this? Anyway, so I decided, okay, well, what I can do is I can help the planet be less primitive. You know, I can make a contribution to building real civilization on this crazy planet. And I got that in my hook. And the first thing I said is, I got to learn how all the money works.
Yes. You
know? And you know, so I spent years just going, and that's why I chose Dylan Reed to go to, because they would let me circulate around the firm and I could learn. And finally, I got to, I think I was doing, it was probably in the energy group, and I said, you know, this is all rigged from Washington. I got to go to Washington and figure out how the money works there. But so I kind of had this purpose. And I knew that's what gave my life meaning. And I'll never forget at the beginning of litigation, I decided I needed to get an expert to help educate my lawyers about certain things.
Yeah.
So I went to see this doctor, and I was trying to ask them about whether they could provide consultancy services, and they said, you need to be on drugs. I said, excuse me? I said, you need to be on drugs. You need to take... I'm trying to remember what the drugs are, but they were like the next iteration of Valium, but they're drugs to make you, you know, pacify you and calm you down and, you know, get you to go along with. And I said, you know, I don't know if you understand. I'm dealing with 18 audits and investigations, 11 tracks of, 18 audits and investigations, 12 tracks of litigation and a smear campaign. I need my mind clear.
You need your head to be clear.
I need my mind to be clear. Yeah. And they said to me, well, what is your purpose? You need to get along. Mm. And I said, no, I don't need to get along. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't need to get along with people stealing hundreds of millions of dollars from me. I don't need to get along with that at all. No. And they said, well, it's hopeless what you're doing. And they said, what's really your purpose? So I said, well, I can explain to you my purpose, but I'm not sure it's a good use of our mutual time. But then I explained the popsicle index. And they said, it's hopeless. There's nothing you can do. And I said, well, put it this way. I have two choices. I can try. And if you've ever read the histories of the biographies of people who've made a huge difference in this world, you know, it looked hopeless when they started, but they stuck with it for 30 years. You know, Jason's story of cleaning up the beaches in Sydney is a perfect example. Yeah. And I said, I can try, or I can agree with you it's hopeless, and then I can sit here and die pretty immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well.
But it was like, I don't want to stay alive. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be rich. I want to have a free and inspired mm-hmm. life. And it's funny, I had a great colleague who is very knowledgeable about the invisible realms. And I told her, I said, I sat down and did a calculation. If I hadn't litigated, instead just cut a quickie deal and made money, you know, I'd be worth about $40 million today. She said, yes, but you'd be dead.
Exactly.
And I said, you know, you're right. Yeah. I would be dead.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can explain all the different reasons someday. Mm. But, it comes back to what we're saying is you have to understand what is the purpose that gives me joy?
Yes.
What is the purpose that gives me meaning? Where you will do your 10,000 hours and master something is where your passion is. What was it Jason said? Your complaint is your call to action.
Exactly. Your complaint is your call to action.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, so something that gets you out of bed in the middle of the night and you're saying,
I gotta
just make sure that. So that's one of the main things that he taught me. But also that if you're taking that responsibility and you believe in something that's larger than yourself, no matter how messy the world is, you're still going to make your bed.
Yeah.
Because that's where the influence starts is you clean up your own room, you make up your bed. And then from there, it's concentric circles out.
Right.
And then you start to maybe clean up your home and then help your family members. And then after that, you help your friends.
Right.
And from that, your circle starts to expand.
Right.
But you never relinquish your integrity.
Right.
That stays throughout all those steps. And it's the habits on a day-to-day basis that help you do that.
Well, building wealth gets powerful when a group of people understand how to do it individually and then collectively. Mm. Because where we can build trust, not because we trust each other, but because we have integrity, then you can start to organize. And then you can deal with the complexity of the six pillars and on. So we should look at the principles.
Absolutely.
But first we should talk about Marcus.
So one thing, Marcus Aurelius is a very, when you read his book Meditations, the one thing that is so critical about this book to me is that he wrote it not to be published on the New York's bestsellers list or whatever. He wrote this to himself. So these are genuine, honest thoughts.
This is what happens when an emperor turtles trying to figure it out.
Absolutely. Trying to govern Rome and the whole empire.
Right.
Meanwhile, he's being backstabbed by people that are very close to him, intimate betrayal.
Right.
He's facing all of his adversity. He's facing a plague. And meanwhile, he's writing in his journal what his daily thoughts are. And one of the things that he teaches, which is so fundamental, is that you just have to be a good citizen. You just have to be a good man, is what he said.
Right.
If you just do that, then who cares if you die tomorrow?
Right.
Because you were a good man.
Right.
And you will do that regardless of the outcome. You don't relinquish that just to stay alive. That's such a nihilistic view that with death, everything ends. Then you don't believe in something higher than yourself that expands afterlife.
Right.
Right.
And you don't align with the invisible realm. So one of the things that really got me turtling was I was one of those people who had a 10-year plan, a 5-year plan, a 1-year plan.
Yeah.
I just had everything figured out. You're supposed to have goals and, you know, it was related to your time budget. You know, I used all the tools. And then when Hamilton was destroyed, I'm sitting there and everything I've worked for years to build has, which was very valuable, is wiped. You know, my 5,000 best friends won't return my phone call. I'm, you know, completely shunned. And I'm thinking, okay, well, I think I need to write down what my goals are. Mm. And every day I would write down my goals, and then I would look at it and say, that's not it, and tear it up.
Yeah.
And I went to church, And the co-pastor had a whole head of steam about something, and she screamed out. She said, honey, you don't need a car. You don't need a house. You don't need a man. You need to get in right relationship with the Lord. And a bell went off, and I said, that's my plan. You know, because I couldn't predict, you know, what was going to happen in the next 24 hours.
Yeah.
So there were days when if I had a plan for the next hour, I was lucky because it was so chaotic. And what I realized is each day I just have to stay in the right relationship.
Yes.
And what that, it causes you to turtle because you don't, you know, you're just having to do the Pac-Man thing through reality. But it gave me a goal and a way of being that was not goal oriented in the material world, but it allowed the pathway to be, you know, a partnership between me and the divine intelligence. And it worked. It just worked because, as Marcus said, you just hold to those principles. And it's amazing what you can accomplish. Now, it was very hard for my lawyers to understand what I was up to because I had a way of doing things that was driven by the principles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember once when I had a wonderful person inside the government share with me a document that was tremendous for us. And my lawyer said, I'm going to take this right into court. And I said, no, you're not. This is secret. We're not going to use it. He was apoplectic. And I said, I got it because they trusted me. And I'm not going to use their trust to destroy their career. We're going to keep it secret. And he was just like, oh, you're so frustrating.
But it's true. You just hold to that, which doesn't seem logical to people around you, but to you, and if you want to call it divine intelligence, your relationship to God, if you want to call it the logos, like Marcus Aurelius calls it, the fundamental laws of nature, if you are plugged into that, it makes sense to you.
Right.
And what you've written extensively about coming clean, which I feel aligns perfectly with this, is just getting rid of everything that's not in alignment with that integrity. And you shed that out of your life and you invest in those people, organizations.
If it doesn't help you build your free and inspired life,
get it out. Yeah.
Okay, so let's go through the principles. So the question in turtling is, what are your principles, not what are my principles? But I thought I would share the principles that came up as I turtled, what I learned. The first thing, and I have a dear colleague who taught me that. This is not for me. I'm inheriting it from someone else. Maintaining a state of amusement. I thought in a world with this much evil, were people being harmed in terrible ways? You know, it wasn't okay to be happy. And then I learned, yes, it is.
Absolutely.
You know,
it's vital. You have to stay up.
And you have to have a sense of humor, no matter how dark it may be. You know, so we have a cartoon every week on the Solera Report, because you have to laugh and you have to make fun of it.
Absolutely.
You can't. Yeah. And it's funny, one of the most powerful techniques against evil is sense of humor, amusement.
Yeah. Humor breaks the spell. It snaps people out of it, and then they're like, whoa, you might be right.
Yeah.
You might be right there.
So I have a wonderful friend. I've never had the opportunity. I've swum with the whales and the dolphins, but not with turtles. But I have a wonderful subscriber who's been swimming with turtles and has a dear friend who told me the story of her swimming with turtles in Maui. And, you know, and I do have an image of a whole gathering of sea turtles who are enjoying the sea and staying in a state of amusement. Yeah. So,
but this is anything from that to inviting beauty into your life, into your home.
Yeah.
Again, from a purely financial standpoint, it doesn't make any sense to buy art or buy some piece of sculpture or something which, you know, has that intangible value. You can't put it into a balance sheet necessarily. Of course, you can trade art.
Right.
But if that helps you maintain your state of amusement,
right?
If that collection of Vivaldi CDs gets you out of bed in the morning and you're like cheering and ready to go, that's a perfect
which
investment.
Which they do. So one of my favorite quotes is, beauty is necessary for survival. It's absolutely necessary. And it does. It helps you keep a state of amusement. So integrating all aspects of our life, we've talked about it. But, you know, we're one person. It's one world. We need to integrate. Don't let expertise chop things up.
No.
And, you know, one of the things you see on the Solera Report, the best intelligence we get is subscribers sharing intelligence with us and with each other. And, you know, we've built an industrial world where knowledge is only considered reputable if it's secondhand. Oh, some scientists got together and they got a lab and they studied it and now it's expert and it's in a journal and you can't trust only things that are in a journal. You know, and that's become a control system, unfortunately. I mean, it could be a system of integrity, but it's not, unfortunately. And so I think it's very important when we integrate all aspects, getting intelligence from people who are really on the ground experiencing it. Absolutely. And integrating it really helps me.
Well, and that's the thing about the Solari network is that, you know, the intelligence that we get from the network, from subscribers and allies and from the team, there's so many different backgrounds that are all colluding, that are all conspiring, if you will, for the same outcome. They're all feeding that intelligence into the network. And you've got everything from hairdressers to investment bankers to people to masons. You've got everything in there.
Everything. There was a great interview that Corey Lynn did for the Solution Series with Matt Hale, who's a wonderful attorney, who's always trying to help people get out of these horrible situations. And then Jennifer Walters, of course, who hosts the Health Series and is a nurse and is trying to help people be healthy outside and not have to go to the hospital. Anyway, but they had this incredible wealth of information about how to navigate a health system that is dangerous. I mean, truly, and they know thousands of traps. Their knowledge is very deep. So they're trying to share this, and it's a perfect example of, you know, people who've worked hard and now can share it.
Well, can I ask you to share that story about the organic food and the financial and the living equity, about uniting them? That's so symbolic.
This one used to really torture me because I'd get somebody who was exceptionally wealthy but said they couldn't afford organic food. And I'm like, really? Really? And it's funny, there's a wonderful, I think her name is Robin O'Brien, there's a wonderful woman who used to work on Wall Street. And she was a food analyst, and she thought organic food was a joke until she had kids and realized her kids were getting sick. And then she discovered, okay, the food system really is not safe. And but I used to have all these clients who thought organic food was just a ruse. And they didn't begin to understand the economics of investing in the nutrition you need to be healthy. And so, you know, my attitude is if you have this much money in your brokerage account, your bank, and you're not getting the very best food and doing the best things you can to make sure your core intellectual, you know, your core human equity, your living equity is healthy, then you've got your, you don't understand economics. So that was always, you saw this a lot with people they were shortchanging their family of the proper investment in education and real estate so that they could have more money in defense contractor stocks to finance the national security state, who was working busily to end their freedoms. It's like...
Yeah, through their pension funds.
Right.
Yeah.
What? No, they were in their brokerage account. I mean, I would have people say, look, my financial planner assures me that I'm not safe and secure unless I have $25 million dollars in my brokerage account, you know, to protect me. And meantime, their kids, who are the only thing they can look to, you know, when the real trouble comes, it's their kids who are going to be protected. Those kids are borrowing money to go to college. Those kids are, you know, being prey to consumer companies and credit cards. Those kids are not getting the kind of healthiest food they could get. Those kids are, you know, struggling to buy a house. They're living in a bad neighborhood. I was like, you're destroying your assets so that you can build more.
To be quote unquote safe.
Well, but, you know, that's somebody who doesn't have a good map and isn't doing good risk management. Exactly. Not because they're not smart, not because they don't. You know, these are very conscientious people. They want to do the right thing, but they haven't integrated, you know, their risk management for their full situation, and they're not understanding they're the asset.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm the asset, not my brokerage account. So,
and that's the same thing when you're integrating that living and financial equity. If you look at two different tomatoes, and one is just from a very generic farm which uses pesticides, herbicide, whatever, and the other one is a biodynamic, as per Rudolf Steiner's philosophy, and integrates everything from the way that the land is treated, to the animals on it, to the moon phases, the whole cosmic intelligence, that's woven into the
So in Wave Genome, you know, Ulrich has done fabulous virtual mm-hmm. science series that inform this, but she covers the research by Pop. It's a German scientist. And he shows that even though an organic egg and a non-organic egg, from a chemical standpoint, are sure. the same, from an energy vitality, total difference, yeah. total difference. Yeah. And, you know, and it gets back to understanding that things that are real, that are invisible to the naked eye, are mm-hmm. real. And it's one of the yeah. reasons I love the Future Science series, because yeah. Ulrich constantly takes you back to what's real and shows you, you know, there's a lot going on this planet that's very, very yeah. real. And
well, one thing that really breaks through that materialistic paradigm of I can't see it, thus it doesn't exist, is what one thing that Jason and I have spoken extensively about is his knowledge of light and frequencies. Mm-hmm. He would always tell these stories. He said, look, if you don't believe that what you don't see isn't true, tell me about UV light and infrared light, because that's very accepted into society, right?
Right.
We get sunburned because of UV light. That's the sort of the general narrative. And he would just bash right through that and then extend that and integrate all these other. He would say everything in life has a frequency. A rock has frequency. Right. This wooden table probably has frequency, right?
Right?
So that's, if you drill deeper into that level, then everything is affected by things that are not easily caught into some material or chemical yeah. reaction.
That
but it's real for
that
sure.
That was one of the beauties of Jason, because he could see, you know, to him it was one world. Mm-hmm. There was a part of the world you couldn't see with the naked eye, the other part you could, and they were both real. And he wanted mm-hmm. to understand them both together.
Yes.
So he was very integrated. Okay, so yep. acknowledging freedom happened one person at a time. This is a big one for me, because so many people believe that we're part of a mass. Mm-hmm. Or we're part of a, I just did something last night on the Solar Report about blobs. I'm a member of a blob.
What is that? What is a blob?
A blob. When somebody says to you, oh, you Dutch, you know, or yeah. oh, you men, you know, suddenly you're not Ricardo and you're not accountable for your individual actions. Suddenly you're to blame for the whole blob.
I see.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
This is a label that's been put onto your head where right. all of a sudden you belong to a group now and own all of their...
Right.
The results that they have in
right.
the world.
Suddenly you don't rise and fall on the merit of your behavior and your production. You yeah. rise and fall with the blob.
Yeah.
You know?
I see.
And you know, I always say when somebody does the blob thing to me, I said, am I talking to you or your Google phone?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's generalizing right. by putting people into those labels.
So to me, one of the things I learned is I'm responsible to be, if I want to be free, I'm responsible to be free. Mm-hmm. And you know, there are many aspects to that, but I have to take responsibility for that. And it happens one person at a time. And you have to coordinate and work with other people who are their own people. They're not a member of a mass or a blob. Ulrich and I have a wonderful interview about this. Freedom and control happen one person at a time. And part of the reason this is so important is somebody is trying to control you, not all Dutch people or all men or all young men. It's not that. Mm-hmm. They're trying to control Ricardo. You know, the AI has something with your name mm-hmm. on it. And if you're going to be free, you have to understand that that control
yes.
and Mr. Global's little circles are coming at you in specific. They're managed to you specifically. And only you can back out of that control
Absolutely.
Grid and be free.
Yeah. Well, that's not hard to believe. I mean, if I open up this laptop and I start looking for certain brands of cars, then next thing you know, on my phone, all of a sudden I get a suggested ad about this specific brand. And
right.
there you go. So that is...
The database has more data. The database has more data yeah. on you than you have.
And we are freely giving it away.
Right. Okay, so let me ask you a question, because you've never had a problem facing reality. So mm-hmm. from the moment you first came up to Savorin, you know, you ask questions and I say, take this book, mm-hmm. listen to this interview. You know, I keep feeding you more and more reality, yep. more and more reality, more and more reality. And you don't seem, you know, sometimes you'll digest. It's like, whoa, you know, yep. and you'll digest. Yeah. But you don't ever back off from it.
No.
It doesn't seem to, you know, it doesn't seem to overwhelm you. Why is that?
So I would definitely credit martial arts training for that. If you're in a ring fighting some other guy, then you have to face reality. You are in that ring and you're not getting out until the bell rings or either one of you is laying flat on the ground, right? So you have
and
to
you
face
don't
reality.
You don't want to lie flat on the ground.
No, there you go. You want to win. You're in it to win it, of course.
Right.
So you have to face reality, and that means accepting that you have to stay grounded. You have to fall back to your training and say, I'm just going to be the most productive that I can be in the next couple of minutes and do everything I can to win. Right. And that's accepting danger for what it is, seeing it for what it is, and not getting emotional. It's not tying some kind of... What's the difference between the concept of danger and then your perception of it, which is occasionally very much more inflated than the actual danger?
Right.
So you want to stay rational. You want to stay grounded. And that's really where the discipline of, I think, martial arts, prayer, meditation can come in to keep you grounded. And just face it for what it is. And don't put some label of emotion onto it. Don't get all caught up into that.
Right, but you and I share a quality, and I don't necessarily have a word for it, but I'm confident I'm going to succeed at what I'm up to.
Sure.
Now, I have good days, I have bad days. I'm not saying it's always perfect faith, but I'm highly confident that I can get to where I want to go. And so anything that knocks me in terms of reality being tough or depressing or whatever... You know, to me, that's just an inconvenience.
Sure.
It's not a stopper. It's not a killer. It's not a deal killer. Mm. It's like, this deal will be done. It will succeed. Yeah. Now how am I going to get around this, you know? And I just think that's a, you know, to me, ugly reality is at worst an inconvenience. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's I need a day off. But
And I would say if you really get a tsunami of different things that are bouncing you off of your groundedness, just read Marcus Aurelius.
Right.
Because he will bring you back. He will just say, no matter what's going to happen, even if you're staring in the face of death, that's okay. If you stick to your principles and you are just a good citizen, that's okay.
Right.
So it's about that too. And I also think facing reality is you taking the responsibility to make sure that you can defend your loved ones against whatever is out there.
Right.
And I would rather be the person looking at the eyes, staring at the teeth of the tiger, than having my little one look at them.
Right.
Right. I would rather take that responsibility myself.
Right. Developing discipline, we all know. Our mothers taught us this. We've heard it many times. Anything you want to say about developing discipline? Martial arts is great for that.
Oh, absolutely. Because discipline, I think, is even if times get hard and you're not motivated to go out and do something on a given day, taking that cold shower, as per Wim Hof's suggestion, we're all invited to jump into the cold.
But you know, I love doing it now. It's not hard.
But that's because I think because you've seen the rewards through sticking through that discipline.
Right.
Scott Peck, in his book, he talks about how discipline is the way to spiritual growth.
Right. Right.
And that's a key one for me.
Right. Respecting the law is a very hard one to do because we're in an environment where tons of people don't respect the law. I had to go through a process of many years surrounded by, you know, very powerful organizations and people who were constantly breaking the law vis-a-me, and I had to respect the law. And the only way to win was to respect the law. And it was when I started the process, I didn't respect the law because I had been trained to believe that the law was just a game you manipulated, and I didn't see it as something that was real and powerful. And what I learned by respecting it and living it and learning a lot about it, a lot of it was, you know, I was in an outward bound legal education, but learning, I grew to respect it, and I grew to respect what can happen when a group of people trust that the other people in their network do respect the law. And that's one of the reasons I'm so adamant. You can't just let anybody in. Because you can have 300 people who respect the law you let in, one bad dog, and it can mess up the whole thing. And that's one of the challenges of risk management, is finding people who will respect the law, not just say they respect the law, but in real trouble, in times of trouble, really live it.
Yeah.
And this is,
I think, not just, I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're not just pointing at the Constitution or laws that have formed around that throughout the years. You're also looking at the laws that you and I, between us, have established.
Right.
What we believe in as a team. what right. you and I as individuals think are the laws that are governing our lives.
Right.
And you're breaking that trust between us, the relationship's right. over.
Right.
Right. That's, we're both respecting those laws.
Right. Right.
And then nourishing our love. One of my favorite sermons says, your love is your power. You can't give up your love. This is what used to drive my attorneys crazy, because I decided, okay, I can fight. Yeah. I can, you know, I can go down to peanut butter and jelly. I can lose everything I have. I can do whatever I have to do to win, you know, but I can't afford when it's over to have lost my love. Mm-hmm. Because what I had to face was everybody and everything I loved, with rare exception, had betrayed me completely and thrown me at the bus and stolen what I had. And the people I most cared about in the world and was the most loyal to had basically, you know, thrown me in the trash. And without warning. Because if they had come to me and said, turn to the right, I would have, I was a good soldier.
Where do I start?
Right. So my favorite quote is from John Cage, Begin Anywhere. It's I've got a big poster up on my refrigerator in Hickory Valley, Begin Anywhere. You know, I think the first thing you need to do after you sort of get an overview of this is you have to ask the question, where do I want to go? And then the second thing, and you may know the answer and you may not. And the second thing you have to do is, okay, you know, for what I want to do, or even if I don't know what I want to do, I do know there's certain tools I need to navigate this world, to get anywhere in this world, to be productive, to add value in any way. And so to me, the first thing is what you did, which was you put together a learning plan, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so, well, tell us a little. We were at a retreat for Soleri, and one of our colleagues said, you know, she wanted a learning plan. So we started to talk about how to do a learning plan. And the next thing you know, we decided our first interview after introducing the curriculum will be, why don't you tell us about it?
Absolutely. We'll be about how to construct a learning plan, because especially nowadays that you have access to all the knowledge in the world, at least that's what it feels like, throughout technology, because technology can be a very good thing in a way. If you use it correctly, it can give you access to all these resources. But that can be overwhelming too, especially if your map is not developed yet and you don't know what's wrong, what's right.
You don't have a framework.
You don't have a framework. You're just bolting on things and you don't know where you're going. So first and foremost, you want to understand what is out there.
Right.
So you start off with a taxonomy. You have to start off with a taxonomy and just say, what does the world, in terms of knowledge, skills, etc., what is out there? Where do I start? And you and I have spoken extensively about the ways that you can do this, and we'll go into more detail in the interview. But one way to do it is just to go out there and say, these are the industries with the underlying sectors. Now, if I was going to be successful in that role, what would I need?
Right.
What is the knowledge? What is the set of knowledge? What are the people that can give it to me? What is the skill that I would need to be able to do that? Once you have a clear picture, clearer picture.
Now, I just have to stop you because, you know, I want you to have the knowledge you need to look at the world from different points of view. I want you to be able to look at the world from God's point of view, from Mr. Global's point of view, from Ricardo's point of view, from your neighbor's point of view, from your own point of view. You know, you need a good enough map so that you're not trapped within a lane.
Sure.
You need a map to see the whole thing.
Yes. And this is where things like travel can come in perfectly, because that will give you that different perspective.
Right.
Will make give you an appreciation of how things work.
Right. So
once you've established a clearer sense, and I say clearer intentionally, because you don't need to know where you're going in 50 years from now, but just walk by the next C, the quote-unquote C.
Right.
Just say, what is the next C that I can see? And break it down into, what do I need to achieve that vision?
Right.
And then you just...
So for example, I'm always telling young people, you need certain communication tools. You need to know how to write a letter. You need to know how to make an audio. You need to know how to make a video. You need project management skill. You know, there are all these things, no matter what you do, you're going to need. So if you don't know what you're going to do and you're not focused on doing, you know, just in your toolkit, just put in those tools. Get those tools, because you're going to need it for whatever you do. Okay, well, Ricardo and Jason, thank you for sending Ricardo.
Well, thank you. It's an absolute pleasure being here.
Yeah.
And absolutely.
Yeah. Well, ladies and gentlemen, building wealth.